Yes, the Eagles were, and yes, Patrick Mahomes is. Those are the answers to the questions we're going to talk about on the show. And we've got a whole host of news and a big look at the big game coming up as well. And to do it with me, as always, Pro Football Network senior NFL analyst, Mr. Trey Wingo. All right. But before we get to talking about the championship games, Trey, before we get to even looking at the Super Bowl, let's start with some of the news that's come up this week. And the first thing I want to bring to your attention in our Let's Talk About It segment is the hiring of Kellen Moore to the Los Angeles Chargers. First, very quick, we heard one day that he was being let go from Dallas. Less than 24 hours later, he's in Los Angeles. What do you think about that? And how do you think it plays for Justin Herbert's future?
Well, let's talk about what had to happen first for that to be a possibility, is that Mike McCarthy, the Cowboys head coach, decided not to retain Kellen Moore.
That's right.
And then said, I'm going to be calling the plays. Good luck with that. Okay. let me just say one, and I'm not saying that 12 is right all the time, but why don't we ask Aaron Rodgers how it went when Mike McCarthy was calling the plays those last few years in Green Bay and how Aaron felt about that. This is Mike McCarthy. And we'll get to the Kellen Moore part of this. This is Mike McCarthy essentially saying, I'm betting all in on myself. And again, to that I say, good luck with that. Let me put it this way. If Mike McCarthy was not retained by the Dallas Cowboys, I don't think 24 hours later he would have another head coaching job.
That's a great point.
Kellen Moore was not retained in less than 24 hours. He had an offensive coaching coordinator's job. That, to me, is sort of the most telling part about this. So now let's get to your actual question, which was, what will this do for Justin Herbert? I think it will do great things for Justin Herbert. I think that, you know, obviously he's going to be stepping into the Lions' den, as everyone has in the AFC West over the last couple of years, and changing. but I think it's going to be good. I mean, my God, the Chargers, you have Herbert, you have two wide receivers, you have Eckler. Like, just put it together, man.
For God's sakes, please.
Just put it together. You have everything you need. Now let's just manage the game better, which is going to be way more on Brandon Staley than it is on whoever the offensive coordinator is.
Yeah, and what's, you know, just on Kellen Moore for a second, and as you talk about the great things this could be for Justin Herbert, this Dallas's problem, right, Trey, was not an offensive problem. Based on how I look at scoring behavior, they were the best behaved scoring offense in the NFL. The moment Dak Prescott returned from injury, they were averaging well over 1 point per minute of possession time. That was best in the league. That was better than the Brock Purdy 49ers.
Yeah.
And what goes into the decision to look at the guy coordinating that effort and say, he's the one that's got to go?
Because obviously Mike McCarthy felt like there was going to be a power struggle if he stayed there. Look, Mike McCarthy doesn't run the show. Jerry Jones runs the show.
Jerry.
And, you know, Kellen's getting a lot of shine. From a lot of places. And, you know, it had been rumored that maybe, you know, he would potentially be his successor in Dallas. So I just, that you're right. It makes no sense. I mean, like, the problems for the Cowboys in the loss to the Niners was they lost Tony Pollard. They only rushed for 21 yards in the second half after he broke his ankle or broke his leg. And Dak threw terrible interceptions. Like, terrible interceptions, both in the red zone. You know, I mean, that I don't know how they dialed up on one of the forced throws to CeeDee Lamb, who, by the way, was their best player. So I understand why you want to feed him. T.Y. Hilton was wide open for a walk-in touchdown, on a 3rd and 5 just outside the red zone. So, you know, unless you're saying and you believe that Kellen wasn't communicating well with Dak how he wanted things to run and what he's seeing. If you believe that's a problem, okay. But I mean, Dak, this year was such an outlier for Dak, right? Because not only did he lead the league in interceptions despite only playing 12 games, it was, I think it was a 40% increase over his most interceptions in a season ever.
Yeah, it was bad.
What we saw this year was the Cowboys often struggled when Dak threw interceptions. And, you know, I don't care who you are, and I don't care how tough you are. If you're Justin Herbert in the second game of the year, you have fractured rib cartilage, it's a 6 months recovery, it's going to bother you all year. Mm-hmm. If you break a bone in your throwing hand, it's going to affect you all year.
Absolutely.
I mean, so that's why he missed five games, because that happened in the season opener. So to me, I don't think Kellen Moore was the problem, unless you, as Mike McCarthy, think Kellen Moore was responsible for all the interceptions from Dak Prescott.
Right. And to your point, that's the reason why you go out and get a T.Y. Hilton, right? Because you know that everyone's going to be focused on CeeDee Lamb. Clearly the scheme worked because T.Y. Hilton's wide open for a touchdown.
Exactly.
Kellen's not throwing the passes anymore. You know, yeah, it's Dak. So we'll see how that goes. Let's stay on the quarterback conversation for a second here, because the other big piece of news, I think, as it relates to the offseason and what promises to be a tumultuous offseason in San Francisco regarding the quarterback division, Brock Purdy tearing his, you know, the injury that he sustained against the Philadelphia Eagles is confirmed to be a torn UCL or ultra, you know, collateral ligament or ulterior, excuse me, not ultra. And I would love to hear your thoughts on what this could mean for the 49ers quarterback situation. Did you think Purdy was going to be the starter going into next year had he not suffered this injury?
Yeah, I think he would have been. But I think now this gives Kyle a real chance to say, hold on a minute. We got Trey Lance. We gave three first-round picks for him. We still don't know what he is. Purdy is going to be a six-month recovery. So, you know, there's no 100% certainty he'll be there to start the season. So now, well, gosh, let's look at the 49ers. What do we have? Well, we have Christian McCaffrey. That's good. We have a really good offensive line. That's good.
Check.
We have a tight end in George Kittle, who's really good.
Elite.
We have playmaking wide receivers in different ways, in Brandon Ayuk and in Deebo Samuel. And, oh, by the way, we have a really good defense. Gosh, if we could just find a quarterback who could just stand in the pocket, not get hit a lot, and release that ball quickly and let our weapons do the work. God, is there anybody that might be out there like that? Yeah, his name is Tom Brady, okay? His name is Tom effing Brady. And he's always wanted to play for San Francisco. He's always sort of – it's where he's from. There's that incredible picture of him as a kid at the catch game, the 1981 NFC Championship game between the Cowboys and the 49ers. It makes all the sense in the world for Tom Brady to go there on a one-year deal before he rides off into the booth, where he will not be as good as Greg Olson. He will not be as good as Greg Olson. I don't care. He's the GOAT of all time, but he's going to have to show him. Greg Olson is great at calling games for Fox.
Greg, I would put him up there as the best play-by-play, not play-by-play, the best color analyst in the broadcast booth right now, I think.
He's really good. He's better than Romo. We can talk about that if you want.
That was my point.
I mean, that guy is just like...
the shine has come off that apple.
Off the rails. Like, it just... I was trying to listen, by the way, real quick before we get too sidetracked here. Yeah. On the game-winning kick, I was trying to listen to it last night. Did he steal Nance's call?
He did.
I think Romo made the call. Jim Nance, I'm like, bro, what are you doing? Like,
yeah,
people just inside the industry thing, people have no idea how good Jim Nance is.
How really
good Jim Nance is at setting the stage, calling the game, and trying to wrangle in Tony Romo, who is just
which is a full-time job unto itself.
Yeah. Yeah. So we kind of got sidetracked there, but I was watching the end of that game and I was like, wait a minute, did Romo bogart Nance's call?
He just took it away, stepped all over it.
Jim has never said a word about it publicly. I'm sure we'll never say a word about it. But like, you live as a play by play guy for those moments. Mm-hmm. Like, that's what you live for. I don't know if you've heard Mitch Holtis's call on the pitchy pitchy woo woo play at the end of the game after the field goal. Mitch Holtis, by the way, does the radio call for the Kansas City Chiefs. He had one of the greatest lines when that game was over, which was just phenomenal. And you knew he had it ready for the moment. But after, you know, the lateral play didn't work, he said, you can doubt the Chiefs. You can dislike the Chiefs. You can disrespect the Chiefs, but you're going to have to deal with the Chiefs. And I was like, oh, Mitch, that was really good. Chills. That got me chills just saying that again. I played that like three times last night. I'm like, Mitch is an all-timer. I knew he had that one in the bag ready to go. Oh, yeah. So we got completely sidetracked.
That's okay.
The conversation. That's okay. But I just, you know, we had some things that we needed to clear up there. I'm sure somebody else is going to be interested in that job too. And that would be Aaron Rodgers.
Oh, well, another, you know, Cal Berkeley connection right there.
Yeah,
right?
A guy who said when he was passed over by San Francisco in the 2005 draft, number one, I look forward to making them pay.
Yeah,
for passing me over. So obviously it means something to Aaron Rodgers as well. Now, I think could Green Bay palate the idea of trading him to San Francisco? I don't know. Tampa Bay might be able to because Tampa Bay's got some issues. They got some. This may be down to the studs time. It may be down to the studs times in Tampa Bay. And if you have, and I do believe Aaron Rodgers won't be in Green Bay next year. The cap situation is disastrous for them if they don't the following year. So they have to try and get something for him and mitigate and then find out what Jordan Love is. Find out what Jordan Love is for once and for all. So San Francisco is going to be a really interesting quarterback situation this offseason.
As we just said, I mean, we've already listed the five potential suitors, right? The three that are currently there. Right. And then, you know, Rodgers and Brady, who, by the way, are not like journeymen. Right. These are legends in the game. It's a fascinating situation to watch unfold. And all because Brock Purdy gets injured in the NFC Championship game. For those people who don't understand that moments matter, that moment has butterfly effects,
we'll talk more about that when we get to the actual breaking down the NFC Championship game, because there are things that people need to understand about that game. There's a myth about that game. And then there's
I think you know the question to the answer I gave, and you may not realize it yet. But said, let's actually get to that right now. But before we do, I do want to thank our good friends over at Pickett. We have talked about Kellen Moore and the Chargers. We have talked about Brock Purdy and the San Francisco 49ers. If you follow me on any of my social media accounts, you know I had the 49ers beating the Eagles in that game. And from the first drive, that whole thing got derailed. But you know this because you follow me on Pickett and you're trailing my bets. You're tracking your own bets as well. We have rated Pickett as the best bet tracking app on the market. Don't take my word for it. Make sure you just Google it. You'll find the answer for yourself. Pickett is the best bet tracking app. It's the one that I use. I place all my fantasy bets over at Underdog Fantasy. You can do all of those things with Pickett. Make sure you do that. Sign up with promo code PFNBRETT. PFNBRETT. It's a free download, free app, and you can get yourself a $100 cash bonus. Okay, Trey, we got our second segment here. I've titled this segment "What Happened," because I think that's a good place to start for the conference championship games across the three different topics I want to talk about. But the first is, here's the question, Trey: were the Eagles lucky?
The answer is extremely. Yeah, and I want to be clear: they did what they needed to do to win the game. They earned it.
Yeah,
but the San Francisco 49ers had a large helping hand in helping Philadelphia earn the NFC Championship. And I want to be clear, I love this Super Bowl because it's very rare where you get a Super Bowl where the two most consistently good teams all season play for everything, right? Mm-hmm. Like there were only two teams that went 14-3 this year. They were the two best records in the NFL, and they belong to – and I get it. Buffalo fans are saying, well, we got a game. I understand that, but you also didn't take care of your business when you had a home game against the Cincinnati Bengals. So first home loss, by the way. First home loss under Sean McDermott, and only the second home loss in Buffalo since 1988. They've been 13-1 at home in the postseason. Best record in the NFL over that time frame. So anyway, we have the two best teams – from start to finish, from week one, that have been the most consistent playing on Super Bowl Sunday. So that's awesome. But let's talk a little bit, because you look at that score and you see 31-7. Oh, very loud. They killed them. Here's a breakdown of every single touchdown drive for the Philadelphia Eagles. Their first one came after a 4th-and-3 pass that wasn't challenged and was incomplete and would have been a turnover on downs on San Francisco. Two plays later, inside the 9-yard line or inside the 8-yard line, they score a touchdown. That right. drive never should have happened because 4th-and-3, that was an incomplete pass to Devontae Smith upon further review. And Kyle Shanahan, that's on him, because when you saw Devontae get up that fast and go, let's go, let's go, let's go, that tells you he's not sure he caught it and he's trying to get away with something. Yep. So that was on Kyle Shanahan, but that's how that touchdown happened. Let's
pause there just for 1 second, though, because the other part of that is, forget if you see that, right? You know they're hurrying to the line. It's the first drive of the game. The timeouts in the first half are not as valuable as timeouts in the second half.
That's correct.
And there's no risk, in my opinion, to risking the timeout on what ended up being the consequential moment of the game. Is that a fair, do you agree with me on that?
Like, yeah, look, I mean, the problem was, A, the officials didn't get it right. And by the way, the two most critical plays in the first quarter, they didn't get either one of them right. The other one was first ruled an incompletion. And, oh, by the way, Hassan Reddick said, no, he fumbled that, challenge it. And Nick Sirianni, to his credit, listened to his players and challenged it. Because it was ruled an incomplete pass after someone thought they dropped the interception, but it was an empty hand going forward from Brock Purdy on the injury to his elbow. Mm-hmm. So everybody's complaining about the officiating in the Chiefs-Bengals game. It was bad all weekend.
I thought it was infinitely worse than the Eagles-49ers game.
I don't disagree with you. Okay. it's just that it wasn't a close game, and the Bengals and the Chiefs have Mahomes and Burrow, right? That's a big part of this. So anyway, the 4th-and-3 thing, okay? That led to their first touchdown. Their next touchdown came three times on 3rd down in that drive. The 49ers committed a defensive penalty. And I'm not saying they didn't commit them. I'm just saying I don't think any one of them, except maybe the hold on Jimmy Ward, would have altered them, the Eagles, not getting that first down.
I will say for the record, and I am overly critical of officiating, I know that. I do think some of them were ridiculous. I thought they should not have been called at all. And I don't mean to derail you there. I want to be very clear. I actually don't think some of them should have been called. I don't think the 49ers committed some of the things that extended those Eagles drives, but please go ahead.
Right. So we had three times on that drive, the 3rd down and a turnover on down situation or a punt coming became a 1st down for the Eagles. Okay. Mm-hmm. So that's their 2nd touchdown. Their 3rd touchdown came when the 4th quarterback San Francisco has played this year, Josh Johnson, who's been in the league since before the merger of 1970. Just kidding. He's been there for 15 seasons.
Yeah, Tom Brady's beaten all 32 teams or close to beating all 32 teams. Josh Johnson has played
for mostly 32 teams. Yeah. So when he fumbled a snap that came right to him inside the 17-yard line. Okay. So once again, right after another situation, backed up. Defense goes on there and they give up another touchdown. So that's their 3rd touchdown. Their 4th touchdown of the game came after on a 4th and 6, they roughed the punter and gave them another 1st down. The point I'm making is it wasn't like the Eagles just methodically marched down the field and just beat the snot out of the 49ers defensive line. Look, their offensive line, Eagles offensive line played great. Don't get me wrong. They played great. But it wasn't like that was the most un-31-7 game I have ever seen in my life that ended up being 31-7, right? And most – we say this all the time. Most games are lost and not won. Yeah. That game was definitively lost by San Francisco because of the injury to Brock Purdy and their inability to make big stops at big plays. The Eagles did what they needed to do to win. I mean, they weren't given anything. They just took advantage of the opportunities that were presented them by San Francisco.
Yeah, I agree with that. I think where I get the most frustrated, I was very frustrated with Kyle not challenging that 4th and 3.
It's on him.
I think there's no risk. I think if you're worried about the timeouts there, I think you're missing the forest through the trees on that one.
Well, let's take it one step further, right? And this is I've had people say this. Oh, that 4th and 3 play doesn't matter.
No.
Because it was a 31-7 blowout. I'm like, what in the hell are you talking about? So let's backtrack it, right? Because people think once a game starts, how it plays out is how it always plays out. Like there's nothing that one variable wouldn't change things. A multitudinous of ways.
Correct.
And that, I'm like, how do you think that linearly when you're watching a football game? Let's just take everything out of the play we just talked about, the fourth and three. Let's assume instead of a huge conversion on a fourth down to give them a first and goal, that's a turnover on downs. And remember, that ball goes back to the 30-plus yard line. So suddenly San Francisco's in much better field position, okay? Yep. And are we just assuming that because San Francisco got the ball that Brock Purdy is naturally going to be injured? Like, no. Like, Purdy might not be in that formation. He might not – they might not have just stupidly twice decided to put a tight end on Hassan Reddick, who was the best player in the game for either team on Sunday. Mm-hmm. So if you take away that one play – it changes everything.
Everything.
Or at least it opens up the possibility for everything else to be changed. That's and right. Maybe suddenly Brock doesn't get hurt. Maybe suddenly they realize they're in this thing. They don't commit stupid penalties down the stretch. It changed everything. Don't tell me it didn't.
Yeah. And look, it's if you just look at two things, field position changes, okay, yeah, with the turnover on downs, and the momentum of the turnover on downs changes everything. Now, if those two things happen, there's no telling, does that change the offensive play calling by Kyle Shanahan?
Correct.
Does it change the way in which they, you know, for example, that play, I believe, was a 3rd and 9 that Brock Purdy got hurt on.
Yeah.
Who can say that the plays on 1st and 2nd down of that drive are called differently and it's 3rd and 2? They're not even in that formation.
Correct.
So all of that matters. And the other thing I would just add here on top of this is there were key penalties called in this game. It's not why necessarily the 49ers lost in a vacuum. But there were key penalties called that extended Eagles drives multiple times, not just on one drive, on a few scoring drives. The blocking, the roughing the punter, I'm surprised it was roughing because it was his kicking leg and not his plant leg. And that's typically the differentiation between running into and roughing.
Right. And by the way, so just so people know, running into is a 5-yard penalty. So that's
right.
And one still.
That's right.
Yeah.
And on top of that, I believe that player was blocked into the punter.
I don't disagree with you there either, which, by the way, would negate the penalty.
So this is where it gets a little – it got completely – now, look, was Josh Johnson – you know, at that point, Josh Johnson's in at quarterback. Brock Purdy – you know, let's not also discount the fact, Trey. We didn't even mention this yet. Maybe we did. Josh Johnson gets a concussion and leaves the game. Brock Purdy, who could not physically throw a football, had to come back in and play quarterback.
They threw one little swing pass to McCaffrey.
Yeah.
I mean, what if I told you, like, this is how crazy that game was. What if I told you that Brock Purdy would start and finish that game at quarterback? He wouldn't throw an interception and he wouldn't throw an incompletion and they would lose 31-7.
That's right.
I mean, it's crazy. It's crazy.
It is.
You know, and the other thing about that is that you just the whole thing was just weird. The whole game was just. I mean, we had the chains break down again on the sidelines. Yeah. We had the punt, I believe, hit the wire that held the sky cam over the thing that should have had a re-kick, but they couldn't determine officially whether or not it had hit the guide wire. I mean, like just so people, and I say this all the time, I love the NFL. It's my favorite sport in the world. As you know, I play golf, right? I got a little thing this big on my golf bag. It's my rangefinder. I can click that thing, and it can tell me I'm 275 yards away from the pin. The wind is running left to right. It's an uphill slope of 14 feet, so you're going to have to play it. It's 280-yard shot, okay? We have in tennis the Cyclops machine by IBM, which, you know, everything point is sort of digitized, and they say, oh, I think that's out. They call that out. The player says, I'm going to challenge that. I think it's in. They put up the Cyclops screen. They go, oh, it was out. Okay. Or it was in. No big deal. We move on. Technology has made that not even a thing.
Right.
In the NFL, we got old guys in sweatpants running out there with a chain link fence to see if there's an index card that can shove in between the last link and the marker. What the hell are we doing? Can we not let technology make us be better? They had to stop the game because they had a backup chain problem. I mean, come on, man.
Whether or not you think the NFL officiating is good or bad, the idea that the NFL is rigged. Did you watch the game? They can't determine if a ball hit a wire, but they rigged the outcome of a game. I mean,
That was my favorite part of the AFC Championship game.
Well, and that was going to be my transition here into that game. This is the next game we talk about. Remember, the answer I gave at the top is yes, Patrick Mahomes is. And that question is, did this game finally, hopefully, put to rest the question, is Patrick Mahomes the best quarterback in football?
Well, if it didn't, then you're the problem. Okay? If you can't see that after this game, then it ain't a Mahomes problem. It's a you problem. Okay? Let's just run through some things. Patrick Mahomes went into that game on one leg. And you can say, oh, he was faking. Man, shut up. Okay? It's a high ankle sprain that is normally a 3 to 6 week injury. Normally 3 to 6 week injury. He got to the game designated with no injury issue because of the great job Bobby Stroop and everybody on that Chiefs training staff did. So he's out there with one leg. Okay? He then proceeds to lose on the first drive their best cover corner in L'Jarius Sneed.
Mm-hmm.
He then proceeds to lose their best linebacker in Willie Gay. And then at various times during the game, Juju Smith-Schuster, Mecole Hardman, who had just come back after 8 weeks or 10 weeks out, and Kadarius Toney all leave the game. So three of his top four receivers, I know Travis Kelce is still there with back spasms, but he's a tight end. Three of his top four wide receivers are now out of the game, and he throws for more yards and more touchdowns and fewer turnovers than Joe Burrow, who has Higgins and Chase. And yes, Boyd got hurt. I understand that, but I'll take Higgins and Chase over Marquez Valdez-Scantling, Sky Moore, and somebody named Marcus Freeman. I was Sunday old.
No. Marcus Kemp.
Or he's Kemp. Marcus Kemp. I was Sunday.
Can't even get his name right. That just shows you.
Marcus Freeman. Who is he? He was a pitcher in baseball, I think. I was Sunday days old when I learned that there was a receiver for the Kansas City Chiefs named Marcus Kemp. And he caught a pass in the fourth quarter from Patrick Mahomes of the AFC Championship game.
A conversion, a first down conversion.
Come on, okay? You can pretend that he's not that, but you know what? You're just pretending, okay? And I love Joe Burrow. Don't get me wrong. I love JoJo. Burrow's great. But how many times did he go, F it? Hey, Chase, go get it. It's like, gotcha, boss.
That was their offense. That was their offense on Sunday, Trey.
That player does not exist for Patrick Mahomes. He does not exist. No. They schematically have to find ways to get mismatches. They don't have Higgins. They don't have a Chase. And he didn't have anybody, quite frankly, in that game. And he threw for 300 yards, threw for two touchdowns, didn't throw an interception. Now, he had that weird fumble thing where he's trying to do all that. Burrow threw two back-breaking interceptions and one at the end of the first half, which, by the way, the Chiefs botched completely. Can we talk about that for a second?
Let's talk about the Andy Reid. Andy, you've had like two decades to figure this out, brother, and you haven't done it yet. But go ahead, Trey.
He's first ballot Hall of Fame coach. Let's be clear. He has this propensity to forget the running game.
Yeah.
Like for example, a few years ago, in the wild card game in which Marcus Mariota then with the Titans threw a touchdown pass to himself, I think in the first half the Chiefs were up like 17-0 or 21-0, and Kelce gets hurt. And that point, that was the Kareem Hunt year when Kareem Hunt came out of Toledo and was just lights out for them.
Yep.
I think he ran the ball three times in the second half. You don't have Travis Kelce, who was your best pass catching option at that time because of a concussion. And you have a lead and you have Kareem Hunt, who was destroying people. He ran it like three or four times in the second half and they ended up losing that game to Tennessee. Just a disaster. So I preface that because here was the situation. They just picked off Joe Burrow. It's 13-3. They have a 10-point lead. There's 2 minutes and 30 seconds left in the first half. Now, as soon as they picked it off, what goes in my mind is this half ends one of three ways, with the Chiefs kicking an extra point, with the Chiefs kicking a field goal, or with the Chiefs punting. Let us not give the ball back to Joe. That is rule number one. Let us end the ball with the half. So we at least have a 10-point lead, and then we get the ball to start the second half, and maybe we can increase on that lead.
Yeah.
So you have to think, manage the situation, and then hope for points. So what did they do? First down throw, second down throw, third down throw, punt. They didn't even get to the two-minute warning. They burned 19 seconds off the clock with those three incompletions. By the way, again, no receivers available to Patrick Mahomes. If they run it one time, okay, you know what that is? That's 2 yards and 45 seconds off the clock. Or if it's not 45 seconds off the clock, the Bengals have to start using their timeouts. Right. So then they would not have had the two-minute warning and their timeouts to march 90-plus yards down the field and put up a field goal. I said to myself as it happened, oh, my God, the Chiefs are going to screw it up again. Last year in the AFC Championship game, they just threw away three free points when they threw it with no timeouts to Tyreek Hill and couldn't get in the end zone instead of just kicking a field goal that would have put them up 14. Why is that significant? Because if the game had played out the same way in the second half, that would have been the difference in the game. They wouldn't have needed that field goal at the end of the game to tie it. That would have been to win it and go to their third straight Super Bowl. That's how significant that was. So instead, they did it again this year. They gave Cincinnati 3 points. And they, instead of a 13-3 lead or a 16-3 lead or a 20-3 lead, any of those would have been preferable to being 13-6, a one touchdown difference going into the second half. That drove me crazy, man.
And yeah, I saw you tweet about it 3 or 4 times, and then it was coming to fruition in the second half when the Chiefs offense couldn't get anything going.
Because they had no players. I also reminded me, remember the October 14 game between the Bills and the Chiefs that was billed as the game of the century and all this kind of stuff? Well, if you remember, in that situation right before the half, the Chiefs were up 14 to – they were up by something, and the Bills were backed up on their two-yard line. Now, just the previous week, Josh Allen had thrown a 98-yard touchdown pass when he was backed up at the two-yard line to Gabe Davis. And so they had a negative play on first down that the Bills did, and – it was almost a safety. So they're really backed up to like the 2 or 3 yard line. And Andy calls timeout thinking, hey, we get a stop here. We get the ball back. We can score before the half. I'm like, let's not give them time. Let's not use that timeout. Let's let the Bills run some clock here. And then if we're in a situation where we think we can do it, then if it's third and something, then we'll do it. But this is like on second down, he called timeout. Mm-hmm. Well, of course, they march right down the field, and I think he throws a fade to Stephon Diggs at the end zone to give, I think, the Bills the lead going into halftime. Gave them the lead. That was bad game management again. Look, man, don't give them more time. Let's let them burn the time, and then maybe we can attack. So this is a thing we've seen from Andy and the coaching staff on several occasions.
Yeah, without question. It's been I made the joke about it being an issue from his days in Philadelphia. That last, you know, two or so minutes, you know, he just seems to have an issue with. But to your
point, to the bigger picture we talked about,
right?
Yes, Patrick Mahomes is the best quarterback in football. He's the best player in football, and it's not really close. And here, why do you say that? Here's why I say that. Patrick Mahomes has never played a road playoff game. Now, I want you to let that sink in. Super Bowls are neutral sites. Patrick Mahomes has started an AFC championship game at Arrowhead every year he's been a starter. 18, 19, 20, 21, 22.
Is that good? That's good?
Yeah. Well, look for perspective, prior to Patrick Mahomes getting to Kansas City, the Chiefs had hosted 0 AFC championship games.
Oh, wow. Yeah. There seems to be a big difference there.
Since he got there, they've only hosted AFC championship games. With that win, I mean, think about it. That's like everybody talks about. We made this big stat when I was doing NFL Live that Tom Brady is more likely to appear in a conference championship game than your average quarterback is to complete a pass. You know, I think when he got there, even when he got there with the Bucs, I think it was like 65% of the seasons for Tom Brady have ended with him in a conference championship game. 100% of Patrick Mahomes' career as a starting quarterback have ended with him playing in at least a conference championship game. 100%. Okay.
It's crazy.
On Sunday, he became the youngest player in NFL history to win 10 playoff games. 27, I think Marino, no, not Marino, Aikman and Montana were slightly older by a year or two. And he's the youngest player in NFL history to win 10 playoff games. He also on Sunday, and this is, you got to word this correctly, when they got the ball back with 41 seconds and went on to win, that was the third time in his career where he has gotten the ball back with less than a minute to play in a playoff game, either behind or tied, and has gone on to lead the team to a victory. No other quarterback in NFL history can claim more than one of those. He's done it three times in his first 5 years as a starting quarterback. You can have whatever belief you want. You can want something to be true. And fan is short for fanatic. And I love it if you're a Josh Allen guy or a Justin Herbert guy or a Joe Burrow guy. I got the guy with all the receipts, okay? So you call me when your guy can do what my guy has done, okay? Yeah. 50 touchdown passes? Check. Only Peyton Manning and Tom Brady. Super Bowl MVP? Check. Regular season MVP? Check. Going to be two-time MVP. He's already won the Pro Football Writers. He's going to win the AP again. Oh, no, by the way, when he does that, Patrick Mahomes will become the first player in NFL history with two regular season MVPs and a Super Bowl MVP before the age of 30. He's 27, right? Yeah. You can be sick of him. You can be sick of the Chiefs. You can be sick of his brother on TikTok and his wife. And I can certainly understand why you would feel that way at times. But don't disrespect what you're watching right now. If he quit football tomorrow, he's a first ballot Hall of Famer. And I don't think anyone would blink an eye.
No, I've said to you many, many times, Patrick Mahomes is the greatest quarterback I have ever seen. And
one leg, bro. One leg.
I saw a great analogy the other day that said, you know, Tom Brady, he is Bill Russell, the most accomplished football player of our lifetime.
Yep.
But Patrick Mahomes is Michael Jordan. Yep. He is the greatest player. He's the greatest quarterback I have ever seen. And I will say this, and I don't think this is a hot take. If anyone's been following me for long enough, you know I feel this way, genuinely. On his best day, Trey, on his best day, Tom Brady couldn't even think about doing with a football what we've seen Patrick Mahomes do. Listen, I want to be clear about that.
I started thinking about this too. Let's just look at the games that we've seen since Patrick Mahomes in the playoffs alone. Forget everything else. The playoffs alone that he has given us as a starting quarterback for the Chiefs. His first year, an overtime thriller duel with Tom Brady in the AFC Championship game. That if D Ford doesn't line up off sides, we have the possibility. Because that was a game-ending interception.
Yeah, that was it. That was over.
It was a game-ending interception, but D Ford lined up in the neutral. Again, had nothing to do with the play. It was just D Ford being dumb. If that doesn't happen, we're talking about Patrick Mahomes has gone to three straight Super Bowls, potentially four and five in a row if they hadn't messed up the end of the first half against the Bengals. All right, so that's the first one. Then 2019, their first playoff game, they're down 24-0 and had the lead at the half. Okay,
they were down
24-0 and had the lead at the half against the Houston Texans. They scored on eight straight drives in that game, okay? So his first year, it takes a gaffe from D Ford to prevent him from beating Tom Brady in his first AFC championship game. The second year, they come back from 24 down. I mean, I think the final score of that game was 54 to 31. They outscored him 54-7 after they were down 24 points, okay? And then they fall behind twice by 10. To the Titans in the AFC Championship game, no problem. Then they're down 10 in the fourth, 11 in the, no, 10, 31, 20. Yeah, they're down 10 in the fourth quarter of the, and facing a third and 17 against the 49ers.
In the Super Bowl.
Yeah. Wasp, no problem. Oh, by the way, they win 31-20. Okay. Then the next year, he gets the concussion against the Browns. And they wipe out the Bills in the AFC Championship game. When they fell behind 10 points, by the way, they fell behind 10-0 in the first quarter to the Buffalo Bills. Final score 38-20 or 38-24, whatever. They lose the Super Bowl that year. It was a disaster.
No offense.
The next year, they come back and have what everyone says is the greatest playoff game they've ever seen. The divisional round game against the Buffalo Bills. 13 seconds, we're behind. Piece of cake. Tie, overtime, Kelsey. Touchdown. And then they have the inexplicable game against the Bengals last year in the AFC Championship game. The point I'm making is this is endlessly entertaining.
Yeah.
Like, think I've just rattled off some of the greatest games I believe I've ever seen. And it's all happened in a 5-year span because of Patrick Mahomes.
That's right. And
it's remarkable. It's remarkable.
That's all that needs to be said. I mean, that's a perfect way to wrap up that discussion. We have our good friend Arif Hassan waiting for us in the studio. Before we bring him in, I just want to point out, Trey, I want to talk about our good friends at Caesars, who we will be hanging out with at the Super Bowl next week. So make sure you look for the content that we have coming out of there, Trey and I. But as you guys know, that's where I place my bets. How did I do in the Chiefs Bengals AFC Conference Championship game that you
won?
You ask. Well, I had Chiefs on the money line. That's a win. Had Chiefs minus one. That's a win. Had Chiefs winning 1-6. Played that winning margin prop. That's a win. I projected the score to be 24-21 in favor of the Chiefs. The Chiefs won 23-20. Yeah. That's a win. All of that was done at Caesar Sportsbook, where you should be placing your bets as well. PFN and Caesars are giving you the opportunity, if you're not placing sports bets yet at a sports book, you should be choosing Caesars. And if you haven't done so yet, we've got a great promo code for you. Just download the app, enter promo code PFNCZR, and you're going to eliminate your risk. You can bet up to $1,250. And if you lose, you will get 100% of that back, plus win or lose, 1,000 reward credits and 1,500 Caesars rewards points. All of those things exclusively given to you by Caesars. Make sure you go do that now. Download the Caesars Sportsbook app. Enter promo code PFNCZR. And if you really want to win, make sure you're telling me.
By the way, to that point, real quickly, you only missed one playoff game this entire run.
That's correct. And it was the freak show that we mentioned earlier.
The NFC champion. You with your predicting method, you had picked the accurate outcome of every single playoff game except the NFC championship game.
That's correct. Yes, sir. All right. So we got Arif Hassan here. Arif, welcome to the show. Thank you for joining us as you do each and every single week. I don't know if you've known this. I've been very respectful. I keep introducing you as Mr. Arif Hassan. Does that make you feel old?
A little bit. Yeah.
Get used to it. Welcome to the rest of your life.
Before we get into previewing the Super Bowl, I thought this was a good discussion for the three of us to have. Trey and I talked a little bit about it at the top of the show. There's been a huge discussion regarding both championship games, gentlemen, about the officiating. I can turn a lot of people off of my social feed during a game the way I complain about what I see in officiating. That's because I think we can be a lot better at it. That's a whole separate discussion. But what I would like to get your thoughts on, both of you, is, and let's start with the NFC Championship game. How much of a real problem does the NFL have with the quality of its officiating? And Trey, you have a good answer for this, I think.
I hope so. I mean, it's a problem, but the NFL probably doesn't see it as a problem.
That's what I was thinking you were going to go with. Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, that's interesting.
Look at the numbers. I mean,
yeah,
it's outrageous. But you know what's worse than bad officiating and being outraged, people not caring.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Like being irrelevant is way worse than being outraged. And there's nothing more relevant.
Kind of what motivated the end of the ref lockout way back.
Who's that to start the season? Was that the Seahawks?
The Seahawks and the Packers. The fail Mary play.
The fail Mary.
Weekend was actually crazy because I think that was a Monday night game, if I remember.
It was a Monday night game.
That Sunday was pretty bad. The 49ers against the Vikings had 5 timeouts. I remember the Ravens. I think it was a Ravens Steelers game. Of all games to screw up, had a number of just egregious calls to the point where the crowd was chanting bullshit. You could hear it through the panoramic mics that were picking it up on the field. So there's an entire weekend of disaster, right? And that was one where it felt like people might actually be turned off. I don't think that's what's happening here. But I will say the problem with officiating in part has to do with, you know, we've got a lot of refs retiring. That's the, you know, more over the past 3 years than I think over any three-year span in a long period of time. That's important. Two, we have a better view of everything that's it. It could be the case that as many calls are being missed now as before, but we're seeing more missed calls now. And we're approaching the limits of what we can ask humans reasonably do.
Hold on a second. Yeah. We talked about this view thing. Trey tells a great story about a ref on a plane that he spoke to. But let me say this. And we talked a little bit about this before, Trey. There's a T word out there that we can fix this with. Give the refs the same view that we get.
I mean,
what are we doing?
Look, It's so funny. The refs are so adamant against the sky judge philosophy, which, by the way, I think the NFL has sort of sneakily snuck in a couple of times by saying, we looked at that. It's good.
But do you hear how the refs couch it when that sky judge overturns a call? After discussion.
Yeah, discussion.
You were told you screwed up. Now go fix it.
First of all, you're right. The refs see the game like this. Yeah. We see the game like this because we have the advantage of these cameras everywhere. Why not?
There's more cameras like every couple of years.
Why not help them? Help me help you. Let me do this for you. You know. And to your point about, I was flying back from doing something in LA, and this guy was on the plane, and he was logging a football game, looking at all these notes, going to play by play. I'm like, "Oh, you work for a team?" He goes, "No, I'm a referee. I'm an official." I'm like, "Oh." So, and this was right after the Nickell Robey Coleman non-PI call that would have changed the game completely between the Saints and the Rams. And I was like, "I got to ask you, man, did you see that?" Well, he goes, "Yeah, I was on the field for that game." I was part of the crew. He's like, "None of us saw it. None of us saw it." And I'm like, "Because they're looking at it differently." Yeah. Like, I don't know how you missed that one. I don't know how you missed it. Like, they call the penalty on what would have been another interception for Joe Burrow on a hit that was this close, Cook on Hayden Hurst.
Right.
And it was the right call. But I mean, like, they got that one right. It was this close. They blew that one completely. I was also one time talking to a ref who used to ref and is now working in television. I will not say who he is or what network he works for. But he said to me, he said, "Trey, when I was calling games, I thought, wow, we're really good at this. Then I started watching the games the way everyone else watches. Like, wow, we are really bad at this." You know, because they don't see what we see. And I would really like the NFL would be doing them a solid if they would actually just let them see the game the way we see it.
So I'll say this about that. I think the reason that refs are so adamant about having that kind of authority, sole authority on the field, I think is probably the best way to put it, is because their job is much more than just, you know, calling strikes and fouls, right? Like, their job includes managing the field, making sure that, you know, the players listen to them and respect them. They prevent fights, right? They prevent blowups. Their job is to make sure that the game keeps going, and it's more difficult if the players don't respect you. So I understand why it's important for them to have as much authority on the field as possible. And the perception might be that a sky judge takes that away. Now, I would disagree with that. I don't think that that is correct. I think that, you know, getting the correct call on the field adds.
That should be the only thing that matters. That should be the only thing that matters.
Guys, but I can see why they would object to that, especially if they don't think they're getting that much wrong.
You cannot forge partnerships with sports books and not care about getting the correct call on the field. Because people are putting their hard-earned money into play, and this is the thing that's costing it.
And that's, even though it was illegal then, that's the whole reason we have injury reports, right?
Yeah.
Like, this is a history that goes back, like, in terms of how much this stuff matters, right? So
let me tailor the discussion to the games that we saw, though. Because I think...
By the way, real quickly, what Arif is saying is, right, the injury report exists so the line can be set.
Right, exactly.
That's the whole point. It exists because the line can be set right in Vegas, so there isn't the appearance of inside information somewhere.
Right.
That's the whole point of the injury report, just so everybody knows. That's why it exists.
So the overwhelming consensus, right, and I had a guy, by the way, send me about the alleged holding calls against the Kansas City Chiefs, and I'm explaining him the rules, right? And he's like, well maybe the rule is wrong because the tweets, you know, say it was holding. And I was like, I cannot believe a person wrote this to me. But look, the overwhelming consensus
get in your head, I guess.
the overwhelming consensus that the officiating was bad in both games. My contention is that it was differently bad in both games. I thought it was egregiously bad in the Eagles 49ers game. And I thought a lot of what people are talking about in the Chiefs Bengals game is people not really understanding the nuances of offensive line play. So let's talk about that for a minute.
Well, go ahead, Trey. There's two things I want to get across before, Trey. I know you got a lot to say on this. One, I think I think the 49ers Eagles game, that was pretty bad. But with the Eagles Chiefs thing, The problem is not just that they don't know the way that offensive line, or in this case, defensive line play works, because on rip moves, the appearance of holding is always going to be there. They can't call that because the defenders put themselves into that position to force.
Correct. They have pinned right. the offensive lineman's right. arm. That's right. not holding.
The issue, though, is that throughout the game, a number of, I would say, officiating errors kind of had piled up in ways that were new. Right, in ways that catch our attention in bigger ways, like we don't see redone plays all that often, right? We just mm-hmm. don't, right? And so to see that happen is just, it's such like a frame shift because, you know, we're taught like, oh, hey, they're hurrying up to the line of scrimmage so that they can snap the ball. And as soon as they snap the ball, the play is just dead. It's in the water. It's concrete. That's what happened. And like, yeah, okay, fine. But like the clock had stopped. Like that play cannot count. The clock had just stopped.
It stopped.
And we.
Thankfully, that had nothing to do with the outcome of the game. Let's just be clear. if that had been a touchdown drive, dear God, disaster. But they
punted three plays. It was the right call.
No, didn't do anything wrong there. So okay, but the point I'm trying to get across is that throughout the game, the perception that the refs were biased against the Chiefs, or biased for the Chiefs, sorry, ended up coloring everybody's perception as the game continued. Right, into every single call afterwards. So anything that was 50-50, people were like, oh, that's clearly, you know, biased for the Chiefs. And so calls that we would have let go, right? And I think the holding plus the roughing the passer, or not roughing the passer, unnecessary roughness on the sideline, I think people would have still talked about it because fans talk about stuff, but I think people would have talked about it way less had that other stuff not happened earlier, because people were now looking for ways that the refs
were looking for justification bias. Yeah, their confirmation bias is what they were looking for. Mm-hmm. But here's why I find that hilarious, because if the Chiefs or the refs or the NFL was rigged to let the Chiefs win, why did they take two touchdowns off the board for penalties?
Correct.
Okay. Right? Why did they negate a huge conversion and yardage that put them in the red zone or near the red zone on a play in the third quarter from Mahomes to Marquez Valdes-Scantling, and Andrew Wiley was sort of making fun of Hubbard begging the ref, and they called that a taunting penalty. I mean, I don't think he even said anything. He was just sort of mocking what Hubbard was doing, and I guess by the letter of the rule, you can call that, but that clearly negated a huge play for Kansas City. Yeah, they got the first down, but they lost all the yards, and eventually they got no points out of that drive. So yeah,
I want to be like Frank. Why would it be the Chiefs? Honestly, yeah. I don't like if the NFL was going to pick a winner, 100% they'd probably pick the Cowboys because of the global market share that they have. Yeah, the Cowboys are the most valuable franchise in the NFL. Exactly. which is proof that it doesn't happen because the Cowboys are inept.
Yeah. Yes. And then let's go back to the roughing penalty, right?
Yes.
There is no way that's not a penalty. You may not like the fact that it's a penalty. You may think, oh, he really didn't do anything that bad to make it a penalty. And all that is true, but it's a penalty. Mm-hmm. Like they call it. He shoved him in the back while he was way out of bounds. Now, you could make the case they didn't call it at the end of the first half. That might have helped the Bengals score a touchdown instead of a field goal. And that's fair. I think they probably missed 37 holding calls against the backup Bengals offensive lineman that they didn't call. I mean, like it tends to even out. And I want to be clear about this. Osai was the best player the Bengals had in that game.
Absolutely.
Especially on defense.
The best player that they had in the previous matchup between the two of them.
Yes. He was absolutely phenomenal. And I feel so bad for that kid. And, you know, I was so nice. It was great to see BJ Hill basically say, hey man,
that was fantastic.
You know, but to Osai's credit, he stood there for a long time and asked the questions. Like he wasn't ducking, and BJ Hill wasn't saying he's not answering that. So let's not get that twisted for some media types. Oh, how dare you? No. He was just saying, let's be human to the kid. And I think that's fair.
Yeah, let's ask like respectful questions or questions that make sense, right? Like I understand why I shut down some of these questions.
Yeah. But there's no way that's not a penalty. Like there's no way that's not a penalty. And if you don't call it there, it's even worse. And Dean Blandino,
that's what I was going to say.
Yeah, it's worse if you don't call it. If you don't call it, it's a much bigger deal.
That call decided the game.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I saw people saying that the refs should have stowed it because refs shouldn't decide the game. And it's like, what do you, that, the player that does decided decide the game.
So what's, the, so what's the cutoff?
The player decided the game by committing the penalty.
Right, that's just don't commit penalties, right? So also, why would we be complaining about what happened in that Saints-Rams game, right? Yeah. That was a no-call that decided the game, right?
And they were asking for the call.
All of these things decide the game, right? It's the point is that the player should not commit penalties. Like that's
right.
I mean, I had someone who I really respect, who I'm not going to mention, put out there that, well, maybe we should have degrees of what is a personal foul. You know, maybe one's a 5-yarder and a 10-yarder, like they used to have in face masks. Remember, there used to be a face mask, a 5-yarder and a 15-yarder, and then it became ridiculous because what you're now doing is asking, with everything else that the officials are doing, right? With everything else they have on their plate, give me your nuanced interpretation of how egregious this penalty was, which is the worst thing we should be doing. The last thing referees need is more to think about. So now in that situation, the ref's got to say, okay, did he get the first down? Yes. Was he inbounds or out of bounds? I think he was out of bounds. Was he pushed when he was out of bounds? Yes, he was definitely pushed. But was it a hard push? Was it a pinky push? Was it a shove? No.
Did he really mean it? Did he try to
hurt
him?
Can't do that. To me, that's as bad as saying in the NBA, you can't hack players. You can't use a hack-a-shack philosophy because they can't make free throws. No, they should learn to make the damn free throws. That's a rule.
And that's even Shaq thinks that, by the way.
What becomes the cutoff, right? So 41 seconds. So is it 45 seconds? That's no longer a penalty? Is it not a penalty after the 2-minute warning?
Yeah, it's untenable.
Dean Blandino, who's a former head of officiating who now does a great job for Fox, also works with me in the 33rd team. He put out a great video on the play that everyone's talking about. You know, there's someone else who's a really powerful sports figure that said, hey, what was your favorite hold on this Chiefs play? And Dean broke down and said, well, that's not a hold by definition because this is the way the thing is played. Well, what about this one? Well, it's a potential. It's 50-50. But in that situation, in that moment, it has to be something really big, you know, and really blatant. And it wasn't. And the push in the back was blatant and obvious.
I'm going to name the person. There's two of them. Pete Prisco, okay, and Bill Simmons. Bill Simmons, shut up about football, man. Go watch the Celtics and do your thing and whatever.
And God bless him. He's done great.
You're doing great. I love your
wallet. He couldn't have been more wrong.
I love your wallet. Love your bank account. I don't want to hear
you. He could not have been more wrong about that.
The holding, it's so important for fans to understand this part about holding. There are three things that are allowed, offensive linemen are allowed to do. They're allowed to grab and hold on. They are allowed to do that.
Yeah.
They are allowed to wrap around the shoulder area if the defender is ripping and if the offensive lineman's body is in between the quarterback and the defender. He's not from behind. Okay. All of that criteria was met on the plays in question on that scramble.
Literally grabbing defensive linemen is so allowed that grip strength is one of the things that you scout offensive linemen for.
Thank you. Why do you think we measure hand size?
One of the things that was discussed was on Orlando Brown on that play, that as he was grabbing on to Hendrickson, Hendrickson tried to pull away to go and grab Mahomes, and he didn't let go right away. That's not the rule.
Yeah.
The rule is that if Brown's body is moving with him, on the grab is moving with Hendrickson, he can still keep holding him.
Correct. Like,
these are the rules. And guys, I teach this physically to pro football offensive linemen. I tell them that the second you see the inside arm that's closest to you swing upwards, put the guy in a headlock. That's what you should do. And so it's important that fans understand this, because you start complaining and talking about the NFL can't determine if the ball hit a wire. You think there's a conspiracy theory. It's more likely that you don't know the rules, and it's available.
More likely that you're what something that's called a fan, which is short for fanatic, which means you have a passionate belief in something, which means you bring the bias to the equation.
That's right. Mm-hmm. That's a great point. Okay. We are. There's obviously a lot to talk about. We've talked about a lot. We are running over time. I want to get quickly here because we don't have to get into it deep, because we still got a whole other week to wait for it. Yeah. But let's talk about real quick the Super Bowl. This is a matchup of the first two black quarterbacks in NFL history to be starting in a Super Bowl. This is a historic event. And it's two of the best quarterbacks and most electric quarterbacks we've seen this football season in Jalen Hurts and Patrick Mahomes. Arif, let's start with you. What are you looking for most coming out of championship weekend to what translates in the Super Bowl?
Yeah, I think I'm really curious about what Spagnuolo is going to do defensively. I think that that's going to be kind of defining the entire matchup, right? Because, you know, the Eagles have the best pass defense in the NFL. Mahomes is going to find a way to make points. But the way that Spagnuolo likes to run his defense is he likes to have two high safeties to stop the pass. What do the Eagles do? They run, and they run with an extra runner. They change the blocking math. They make it really difficult for you to keep too high. They make it difficult for you to have a safety in the box, honestly, right? Because they just have so many extra players ready to block because you are blocking somebody with the read. That's exactly what happened to the 49ers, right? The 49ers are great against the run, and then suddenly the Eagles added another blocker with the read. Sometimes it didn't work out. Nick Bosa did a fantastic job on that near safety, right? But most of the time, he was able to hold one of those linebackers while, you know, Gainwell or Sanders or Scott or whoever was able to take advantage of the extra space afforded to him. Spagnuolo is going to have a lot of work ahead of him in order to help stop this sort of thing, because the additional, like, the changes in the blocking math are extraordinary, and Spagnuolo's done a really great job over the past couple of years through a lot of criticism early on. And his preferred style of defense, which not a lot of people are actually doing, right? There's a lot of too high, but not in the way Spags does it, right? His preferred style of defense is particularly vulnerable to what the Eagles like to do. So I'm really curious about that.
Trey, what about you?
Yeah. Well, I'm not that detailed into the game yet. But what you said, I think, is really interesting. It is the first time we have two black African-American quarterbacks playing off against each other. And what I think is important about that is that that's not the thing that everybody's talking about, because I don't think people assume that's a thing anymore. And that's the best part of this. Okay. They just see these guys as just quarterbacks. They don't see them as that. I mean, I remember when, you know, Tony Dungy and Lovie Smith were the first two head coaches for Super Bowl 41, African-American head coaches. One of them was going to win the Lombardi Trophy for the first time. That was a huge deal. We've seen Doug Williams as an African-American quarterback win a Super Bowl and a Super Bowl MVP. We've seen Patrick Mahomes do it. What I'm happiest about on that front, if you want to celebrate it, absolutely celebrate it. It's because it's a breakthrough. But I don't think the fact that it's not the first thing people think about, I think, is a real sign of progress, right? I mean, it's just not a thing anymore. Some people are saying the Bears should trade Justin Fields just to go get Bryce Young with the first overall pick in the draft. It's just not the thing that stands out anymore. And I think that, to me, is the sign of real progress in football, that thing is no longer, which was a thing forever, which is why Warren Moon had to go to the CFL, you know? And I
think it was a relevant part of the discussion as late as 2015, right? With Cam Newton, you know, winning MVP and having a discussion about there, or when he was in the draft in 2011, when I think it was actually Warren Moon came out and spoke about, you know, the way that people were talking about Cam Newton. I think that those have all been very recently, you know, stuff that we've talked about. And I do think that, you know, hey, a lot of progress has been made. This is fantastic. And I think that you're right, that the fact that this isn't the centerpiece of the conversation in the news about it is a sign of progress. I don't think we're done. Right. I think that there's a lot left to work on. We know that, for example, black quarterbacks get benched earlier after accounting for performance than white quarterbacks do. In fact, they get benched twice as quickly as white quarterbacks do for the same level of performance after accounting for wins, yards, completion percentage, whatever. There are still important discussions to be had. We do know the top quarterbacks in the draft are frequently black quarterbacks, and they do get drafted early. That's really nice to see. But I still think there are probably some unexamined biases that are worth interrogating. And so I think it is cool. I think it's so cool to be able to celebrate this progress, to have this. The one thing I am worried about is that we stop having the conversation, right? Just like when, you know, Obama was elected president, racism wasn't over in the country, right?
No one's saying racism is over. Racism is never going to be over.
No, right. Yeah. But I just hope that, we continue to have these discussions, knowing that the fact that these discussions are not at the forefront of our minds is that sign of progress that we're hoping to move towards.
Yeah, all great points. And look, we have an important.
It's the Andy Reid Bowl. It's the Kelce brothers. We have the first time brothers are squaring off as players. Like, we had the Harbaugh brothers as coaches. It's the first time we've had two brothers square off against each other in the Super Bowl, which is amazing. We have Andy Reid, you know, playing. You know, he's the only coach in NFL history with 10 playoff wins for two different franchises, and they're meeting up on the Super Bowl. And oh, by the way, when Andy Reid was given the head coaching job or hired as head coach in Kansas City, one of the assistants he did not retain was Nick Sirianni, who was the wide receiver coach in Kansas City at the time. And now they're going to meet on Super Bowl Sunday.
The best part about the week between conference championship games and the Super Bowl is uncovering those storylines. And there'll be a lot more, as we mentioned. Actually, all three of us are going to be in Glendale, Arizona for the Super Bowl. We have a lot of content coming out of Pro Football Network for you coming from that. Trey and I have a lot of great sit-down interviews that we're going to be doing as part of the More Than Football series. Make sure you check that out as well. And we will see you next week from the site of the Super Bowl. He is Trey Wingo, Pro Football Network senior NFL analyst. He is Arif Hasan, Mr. Arif Hasan, lead NFL analyst for Pro Football Network. And I am Brett Yarris. I am a guy who likes behavior science and sports betting. So we'll see you next week. See you.